This is joint work with Paul Anderson at the University of Edinburgh, and also Andy Gordon, who's at both Edinburgh and Microsoft Research. So the first thing I want to start by saying is that configuration is really quite a hard problem, and I think a good way of showing this is to say, well, we know that software is hard. And you can see on this graph here, this is a graph of disruption events at Google from 2009 from a book called The Design of Warehouse Scale Machines. And you can see you'd expect configuration to be one of the biggest sources of error. But what we notice, software to be one of the biggest sources of error, but what we notice is that configuration is coming in at over 25% of the reasons for downtime, which we find quite surprising. So we're still a long way from producing good configuration. So the first thing I should probably start by doing quickly is just defining what I mean by system configuration, because different people mean different things. So we're interested in configuring not just physical machines, but firewalls, networks, maybe an entire data center, or going off to the application level and configuring applications. And one of the things that comes up a lot is security. And you know, proving that certain properties of a system hold would be useful over perhaps a system generated by hand, but what about also a system generated by perhaps a computer? And what we're seeing increasingly now is people talking about the cloud and system configuration, which is bringing this really big scale to things, but there's a lot of similarity in the cloud. And really, it's often these enterprise systems which are more complex. There's a lot of legacy support in there. There's a lot of real-world, rather messy problems. So we're quite interested in how you represent this quite complex, bespoke configuration. So the other aspect is we're talking about declarative configuration. So probably a lot of people in this room are already aware of tools like Puppet and CFEngine. And the super high-level overview is that in declarative configuration, you're saying what the goal state of the world should be. So here I'm just saying, I want to make sure Apache is installed, rather than saying, you know, apt-get install Apache. So you're thinking in terms of where the system should be, rather than the steps needed to get there. And that's a really important abstraction for my work. And there's a few declarative configuration tools around, a little bit of history here. Sort of starts with CFEngine and LCFG from Paul about the same time. You see bconfig, more recently tools like Puppet. So I'm sure everyone's heard of these. These are really sort of the state of the art now, sort of CFEngine 3 and Puppet. So we've got these tools, but what would we like to do? What's missing? What would be useful? And we say, first of all, the ability to verify that your configuration conforms to some sort of model, some sort of properties that hold over it, so that when your junior sysadmin adds a new rule or changes a value, you know perhaps that was in some sane range. And the other aspect is, if we're going to write sort of constraints over the model, then perhaps we could start to infer valid configurations automatically. So there's two big questions I'm asking. A, how do we find these solutions automatically? And B, how do we write down models of our systems in the first place which would allow automatic configuration? So the answer to A is our sort of prototype tool we've written is called ConfSolve. And so the question, how do we automatically find these solutions? And the answer is we take advantage of the academic tools that are out there. So this is the architecture of ConfSolve, and you can see in blue are the bits that we've written, and green are sort of off-the-shelf academic prototype-grade tools. So they're quite hard to use, but they're also very powerful. And so what we've done is, in the middle here, in this green bit, we've taken what's called a CSP solver. So this is a constraint satisfaction problem, and it's basically a big mathematical combinatorial solver. It will do sort of big bin packing, big linear search, and it's got a very low-level input language that I'm not even going to show you because it's that ugly. And someone's written a sort of, let's call it a very low-level sort of abstraction over this input language called MiniZinc here, and that gives us sort of like an assembly-level interface in as a text file. So we're taking that assembly level, which is then compiled into this input language, and we're jumping up to a much higher level here at the beginning, where we take we've defined a very high-level language, which I'll show you in a second, which we've just called the ConvSolve language. And this gets compiled down into something that can be automatically solved. And the output then, we process it again and turn it back into a high-level description. So in this case, we've got a JSON-like language, which we call CSUN. So I'll show you some ConvSolve now. So it goes back to that second question of how do we actually write down models with constraints in. The ConvSolve language itself is designed to be vaguely familiar to system administrators. It's not designed to be a finished tool. It's a prototype. And we've taken a lot of ideas from object-oriented systems. So you'll see inheritance. You'll see primitives such as integers and booleans, also sets of integers. And we've got objects, references between objects, sets of objects, and so on. And you can then add constraints to your system, so you're seeing things like inequalities, quantification, and summation. So I'll show you some code now. So this is the example, roughly, that we use in the paper, where we're saying we've got a bunch of machines and we've got a bunch of VMs. We want to put the VMs on the machines. And we're going to get the solver to do this automatically for us. So we start by defining a machine. And in this case, all machines are the same. So we've all got 8 CPUs and 16 gig of RAM. And we then define a class for virtual machines. So there's no instances yet. So the most important point here is 4, which has moved a bit. You can see we've defined a host as a ref machine. And that is a sort of pointer to a machine. We don't have any instances yet. So if we go to the next slide, what we'll do is we'll first show inheritance. So we can customize this VM class that we had and said, you know, go back. You can see we defined them as integers, but we're not giving them values. So let's add some constraints now. The first two here are simple constants. We're going to say there's one CPU, there's 1 gig of RAM. But then we've added an expression where we say the disk has got to be less than or 20 gig. We'll leave it up to the end user as to how much disk they request. And so in this next slide, now we define some instances of objects. So let's just have two machines, nice and simple. We're going to request just two physical machines. We're going to have a SQL Server virtual machine, which is going to be a large virtual machine, and then the end user here can specify the amount of disk. They're saying they want 412 meg of disk. And same with the web server. Here we're creating a small VM, and we decided to explicitly put it on the public network. The other one that we've not specified, the solver will decide. So at the moment, we could end up with a nonsense solution. So we need some constraints over what can happen. So we've defined these two virtual machines. The first thing we'll do is we'll aggregate them. So we'll create a reference there to two virtual machines. And that will be filled in automatically. There are only two, so it can only be one solution. And then we're going to add this nested constraint here, where we're saying for each machine, for each virtual machine here at number 2, we're going to sum over the machines where that virtual machine is hosted on a physical machine. So for each physical machine, we're going to look at all the virtual machines, and we're going to sum up the CPU usage. And we're going to say this has to be less than the actual CPU provided by the machine. And we do that for each of the three resources. So we do it for CPU, for memory, and disk. And you can see at number 3 there, we've got quite a nice expression for filtering, sort of SQL-like, for filtering on the quantified set, which is the VMs. So just a little reminder there next to 3 that Host is a reference, so we can use the dot operator to step inside the references. Okay, so the solution that comes out, don't worry if you can't see it, the important bit is labeled down the bottom, is that you can see we've got a JSON-like structure here coming out that just matches the object hierarchy. So the idea is that you can do what you want with this. There's no built-in notion of a VM or built-in notion of physical machines. We're just dealing with objects. You can put what you want in, and you take this, and you do what you want. Perhaps you would turn that into Puppet if you wanted. And you can see at the bottom here, this host has been filled in automatically on both of the virtual machines. So in this case, the solver's decided that machine one, so that's the index into the array, has two machines. Machine one is hosting both of the virtual machines. So the solver has only filled in this host variable, and that's it. So this is just dealing with two machines. One question is, when we put this in the solver, does it scale up? Because you've got this combinatorial problem. And the answer is, yeah, it does quite well. Here you see on the left the memory usage. This is in gigabytes. And I've simulated up to 1,000 virtual machines. And this was done on sort of what was a simulation of two racks of physical machines. So I had 98 physical machines, 1,000 virtual machines. And this memory usage is the solver. It's not the ConvSolve compiler. This is all pure solver work. And on the right, you're seeing the times here for up to 1,000 virtual machines. So we're seeing up to about 200 seconds, which is not bad. A lot of this time is coming from that intermediate translation, not from the ConvSolve compiler, but from the MiniZinc compiler. So this is kind of research level interface, which I think could be improved. So there's a scope for an improvement of about a factor of 5 there, from what I can tell. So this could be reduced considerably. It's already pretty fast. Okay. So one of the important features of ConvSolve that differs it from some of the sort of experimental papers that have been written in the past is that it can do optimization of the solution. And this is really important. So often we want to optimize some aspect of the configuration. And there's two types of sort of preferences that you can optimize for, sort of soft preferences where we're saying, you know, try and do this if you can, best effort. And this differs from what we've seen, which are these sort of hard constraints of saying, you know, you will not pack more VMs on the physical machine than will fit. Hard constraint. And the underlying solver that we're using actually supports these maximization sort of functions. So it's there, it's ready for us to use. And we thought this was sort of a nice addition, but we realized actually for ConvSolve, it's not just useful, it's really essential. And I'll show you why with an example. So this is an example of cloud bursting. So we're saying we've got an enterprise data center, and occasionally we'll get sort of peak usage, and we'll spill over into the cloud. And we found that when we tried to solve this with ConvSolve, we got a solution like this, where the enterprise is hardly full, and yet the solver has decided to stick things in the cloud, because we've not told it otherwise. We've not given it a goal of using the enterprise. So when we choose to use the optimization functions, I'll show you the code for that in a second, we get this placement, where the enterprise is being used until it's full, which is exactly what you'd expect. That's what you do by hand. And, whoops, if we keep adding, they go in the enterprise. And then once the enterprise is full, and only then, do we start using the cloud. So I'll show you how we model this using ConvSolve. Okay. Oh. We start from 3 for some reason. So at the top there, we just define some classes. We've got data centers and services. So services live on machines. The solver is deciding where to place, which machine to place the service on. Number 2 here, we define a couple of different data centers. We've got a cloud and enterprise, simple enough. Number three, we're going to have three different classes of service. And these are arrays. We've just got one DHCP and one DNS at the moment. And we're going to have three workers. So we could keep ramping that up to hundreds. And right down at the bottom at number four here is the optimization constraint. And this does all the hard work. And so we're saying we're going to maximize the count of services where that service is hosted on an enterprise data center machine. That's a fairly straightforward constraint. And from just writing that, we're able to get the solver to make sure that when it does its bin packing, it does it first in the enterprise. And so that's really a unique feature of this sort of ConvSolve configuration language, is it lets you write something like that. Okay, so I'm going to wrap up by talking about future work. And one thing that we're looking at, really, I think this is going to be another one of his key points, is reconfiguration. So what we've shown here is sort of configuring something for the first time. Okay, great. But what happens when you do it the second time or the third time? Because you've already rolled out the system. So if it says, oh, just move everything, because we can optimize it by improving it by, you know, 0.5%, it's not going to be very useful. So we're looking at ways to incorporate that into the language so that you're not having to build this huge configuration by hand with all these complex, sort of deep-nested optimization criteria. And, you know, sort of reacting to changes but minimizing the impact on the existing system. You're saying, well, it could be brilliant, but we'd rather it was just a small change. And how do we add primitives to the language to say that? And the second thing, which is really an important point, is that, you know, we're sort of playing with a little platform here. We're not trying to build a new configuration tool. Perhaps you could take a configuration tool, pass some of it, throw a bit of it into ConvSolve, automatically solve it, and output, you know, your Puppet or your CF engine or whatever you had. Use it as a back end or as a toy. It's a research prototype to play with. It should be usable, but it's not supposed to be the be-all and end-all by any means. You know, the other tools are great. It's supposed to inform. Okay, so thank you very much. Yes, yeah, Andy. The what, sorry?
It's called Lantern. It eventually shipped as part of system center configuration management. It's a constraint-based system that used OCL, language, and BOP as the object.
Yes, yeah. I actually spoke to someone who worked on the OCL stuff in System Center. They said they hadn't developed it quite as far as they'd like it to go. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what was going on under the hood with that, or if there's more information.
They were modeling at a very low level.
Yeah.
And so the models became very, very complex.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I have seen that. Yes. Because we're taking a sort of declarative view of the world, I guess it doesn't fit that well with orchestration, because orchestration is sort of really interested in moving from one step to the next. I mean, you could use this just for one step. So you could say, look, here's the input, tell us what to do. But this fits in more with the configuration management side of things, of taking this declarative view and saying, you know, we're here, you know, these are the constraints. Tell us what there should look like. We're not saying, how do we actually get to there? So it's more in that configuration management than it is in orchestration, I think.
One of the things that I can see, I mean, obviously the obvious use case, which is the one that you presented here, is the cloud bursting and how to pick which VMs go where on which machines. But I think that I see some promise in some of the automatic
Yeah, and at that point, it sort of becomes sort of this autonomic loop. And yeah, I think that'd be very interesting. Oh, go on. Have we got time? Yeah?
Those graphs of the performance with increasing number of VMs, it seems to me that the problem is to be NP-complete, but those graphs solving
yeah, it's I mean, for that case, I think it's probably NP complete. For the optimization, it ends up being NP hard. But the solvers use a lot of heuristics. There's a lot of whole bag of tricks that's been accommodated over the years. So it really does vary from problem to problem. You can't sort of comment too specifically on why I did this or why I did that. I've played around with a few variations on that, and I get a similar curve each time. So that kind of bin packing problem works okay with the solvers. If your particular problem may turn out to be evil, and then you may get a much worse curve. I mean, there's a pretty steep curve in there, and you know, 2000 is probably unobtainable. So you are getting that nonlinear scaling. But it scales reasonably well for that case, and it's just down to the heuristics inside the solver. Yep.
So just a quick comment. It's possible, I guess, that some of your use cases may fall into one of the non-NP hard subclasses of CSP. You could be doing Hornsdyke or something. It would be really, really cool, I think, to look and see what sysadmin, what configuration problems fall into these easily solvable.
Yeah. I mean, sort of complexity analysis is notoriously difficult to get right. But it would be interesting if you could come along and say, actually, we've got a whole class of really, really useful problems that it turns out aren't too hard. That would be very nice to know, certainly.